Hey, Petty fans, welcome to episode 4 of the Richard Petty Motorsports Podcast. My name is Bradley Sisson.
My name is Chris Sullivan. I'm the producer, and we are the digital media team here at Richard Petty Motorsports.
That's right, and today our guest was the crew chief for a few different drivers in the Cup Series. Among those, Stanley Smith, Ward Burton, Gary Bradbury, Jimmy Hensley, Greg Sachs, Hutt Strickland, Steve Park, Darrell Waltrip, Rick Mast, Dave Blaney, Kenny Wallace. The list goes on. Needless to say, he's worked with a few guys.
Yeah, there's some winners in there.
Absolutely. Our guest is Felipe Lopez. He's the competition director here at Richard Petty Motorsports, and really enjoyed having Felipe on the podcast. It was a lot of fun.
A lot of fun. A lot of laughs. Good stories.
Yep. He'll be able to take us back to kind of his early days coming from Texas, how he got into the sport, what he does now, some insight, really good insight for you guys. I think you're really going to enjoy. So give it a listen. Here's Felipe.
Felipe Julian Lopez, born in Verdun, France, Army brat, and then grew up in San Antonio. And my position here, competition director for Richard Petty Motorsports.
Thank you for taking the time to talk with us today. Appreciate you coming on board.
This is awesome. You brought me in behind JD. That's not fair, but
no, we brought you in behind Dale.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Eight time.
He's twice as old as me, so that's okay. I can handle that.
Yeah, if anybody, Dale caught the short end of the stick, unfortunately. So you said you were born in France, but aren't you originally from Texas, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, my father was in the military, army. So he met my mother. I was born in France. We lived there a couple of years, then we moved to Texas. That's where he was from. And basically grew up in San Antonio till I made the move out east to go work on race cars.
What was that first position that you had that brought you here?
Well, in San Antonio, I went to a pretty good high school, and there was a guy there named Ken Neal. He raced late models at the San Antonio Raceway. So I got a job like most people do when they enter racing. I swept floors.
Right.
And then from there, I got to duck work, and then from duck work, I got to bodies, and then just, you know, moved on up. So we had a mutual friend. His name was George Hagee. He had ran the All-Pro Series out of San Antonio, young kid. And he moved to Alabama to go work for Neil Bonnet Race Cars for Frankie Grill. And he had a customer named Stanley Smith that he was just having a bad summer. He had a lot of wrecks and a lot of stuff was going on. And he said he was unloading the car on a Monday and it was pouring down rain. And he said Stanley was whooped. And George went up to him and said, "You need any help? Because I know a guy in Texas that would love to come out here and work for you."
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Stanley called me up. My mom was in France visiting family. I flew to Alabama, came back, got the job. So when my mom came back from France, it was a little bit of a surprise that, you know, she thought the car was packed to go back to Texas A&M, finish off my senior year.
And instead, you're going to Alabama?
I said, "I'm going to go to Alabama, work on race cars." So that went over great.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So how many people did Stanley have working for him at the time, or was it? Were you one of the first?
I was, he had his sons working for him, and then he brought me in, and then from there we started to build a team. We ended up with a lot of people you probably know, Chad Knaus,
mm-hmm.
Joe Shear Jr., Butch Hilton, Ronnie Crooks. It was a little bit of a powerhouse team. We just didn't realize it back then. That was the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And so we ran the All-American Challenge Series, which was kind of an all-pro series that NASCAR ran. Stanley won his first race, I think, like 5 weeks later. Then we ended up winning four races that season. Then we won the championship. And then, you know, we had it licked from there.
Wow. I mean,
we figured his son was doing cold calling, looking for sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
And he called up this little company in Dallas, Texas called Interstate Batteries and got a hold of Norm Miller, the president.
Yep.
And those two hit it off, and the next thing I know, we're sponsored by Interstate Batteries, and we ran a couple of races for them, just local stuff. And then Norm said, "What do we got to do to run on Sunday with them guys I see on TV?" So, yeah, we went from All-Pro to Cup overnight.
Just skip.
Yeah, we didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah.
But, but we had a blast, and we had a lot of help. Hutt Strickland, you know, that was all that Alabama gang, so Hutt Strickland helped us a lot. Donnie Allison came over. He helped us a lot. Donnie helped a tremendous because Donnie knew the ropes,
mm-hmm.
and he could point us to what we needed to do. You know, we weren't delusional. We didn't think we were going to go out there and win all these races. We just wanted to show up, make races, be respectable, And yeah, it was fun times.
Wow. It's not often you hear about like starting a team basically from scratch, right? And
it was
success pretty quickly. Scratch. Yeah.
Yeah, we were buying old Bobby Allison cars, the mm-hmm. Buick LeSabres, where the hood's actually wrapped around to the fender. It looked like a Jeep. Because Bobby had switched over to the Regals.
Uh-huh.
And those were real race cars. When I say real, they had chrome bumpers, stock grills, and you had to put the screen on there, and your hands would be porcupine leaving that night, and real windshields, and it was a different time.
Yeah, Dale Emman was talking on our last podcast about the grills and the mesh and all that.
Yeah, he said he tried to get by with a little bit tighter of a mesh for qualifying one time.
Dale didn't push the rules or anything, but you know, I make
not fun according of, to him, he didn't.
I make fun of Dale because like I feel like I came from that era, and I kid Dale that he came from Ben Hur and working on those chariots, came up with the spokes and killing the wheels. So yeah, he calls me some stuff afterwards. I've learned a lot from Dale. I mean, he's great.
Yeah, we had a really good time with him last week. He told all the stories that you and I have heard. We were talking, but hopefully, you know, a lot of people out there probably haven't heard those from his perspective, and they may have morphed a little bit over time.
And if you hang around with Dale for more than 10 minutes, you're going to find out it ain't always been this easy, and you got to toughen up, son. So
I was looking through your racing reference here, and you've worked with a lot of different drivers. You know, we talked about starting out with Stanley Smith, Steve Parks on the list, Darrell Waltrip, Dave Blaney, Hornaday, Tony Raines, Terry Labonte, Nemechek, Ward I'm Burton. My question is there anybody that you haven't worked with? You know?
I think that covered everybody for the who's who.
You can add Eric Jones to that list.
Eric Jones, yeah. Bubba, and you know, it's who was it? Suitcase Jake had that reputation of going around. I wasn't jumping teams on purpose. For some reason, there was a little stint there for about 10 years where I got this reputation that I was getting pretty good at starting up teams from scratch.
Okay.
So I don't know why.
Well, I mean, you just talked about, you know, what you do with Stanley Smith. Maybe that had something to do with it.
Yeah, but we didn't know what we were doing there. So, but I mean, I ended up going to Travis Carter's to get Darrell, that team up and running. Mm-hmm. They had already had Jimmy Spencer, so we just added on. Was one of the first employees for DEI on the Cup side. He already had the Uries and all that running on the Xfinity side. So I've been blessed. I mean, I feel like, yeah, I haven't been able to stick with one driver for a while, but I've gotten it's a great opportunity to work with all these different drivers. A lot of great drivers. I mean, each one brought something to the table that was pretty cool. And here I am all these years later, and I'm still friends with all of them. That's what I really like about this sport. Hutt Strickland was, you know, there when my kids were born. Not there. So yeah. I was there. He wasn't. But, you know, it's just that whole time of coming up. It was a different time in racing. I think we spent more time getting to know each other just at the races, on the weekends. It's different now, not just because of COVID, but it's just different on how we race. We come in, we do our job, we leave. You know, and it's something to say for that. It helps the team owners, but it's different. And I'm sure Dale got into all that.
Yeah, he talked a lot about their adventurous travels from East Coast to West Coast with, you know, car on a trailer or driving the thing. I mean,
driving it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't fathom. I'm not that old.
And he was talking about how they went up to a service station and they slept in the car.
Yeah, those are different times. Did any of those drivers really stick out in your head as like somebody special or you know?
Well, now you're going to get me in trouble. Because, like, I worked with 15 of them, so whoever I don't mention here is going to be mad.
Yeah, well, Darrell Waltrip mentioned you in his podcast interview with Dale Jr., so, you know, what was that experience like?
Darrell was fun to work with because that was not a planned deal. Mm-hmm. We had Steve Park. We went to Atlanta. We were incredibly fast that day. We were playing around just changing gears, and unfortunately, we had a pretty bad accident. Steve got hurt. So we needed someone to come in, and the first week, Dale put in Ron Hornaday, and Hornaday did a great job for us, but Dale was afraid that trying to run the trucks and the Cup was going to take his focus away. And Ron had just come off a championship, and Dale wanted to help him win another championship. So I think Darrell was having a little bit of problems with his existing team, with sponsorship and stuff. So mm-hmm. he brought Darrell over. And, you know, we didn't know what to think because he wasn't having some really good runs at the time in his car. But I'm going to tell you what, he jumped in our car, and it took one race for us to get figure out what to do for him.
Mm-hmm.
And
this was like right towards the end of his career, wasn't it?
Yes. He was looking actually for where he was going to retire. And we had a great run. I think he was in the car for like 12 races or something. And if that would have been the season, he was in the top 10. That's how good he was running.
Wow.
So, I mean, it was a blast. Just his demeanor, and him and Dale were a lot better friends than I think a lot of people realized. And I remember his first week in the car. You know, Dale told him, he said, look, this is a temporary deal. So you're going to come in here, you're going to tell these boys what's wrong with the car, they're going to fix it, and you're going to go race. Okay. Well, if you know Daryl really likes to say, you know, well, those guys got this, and those guys got there. So
how come we don't have that?
He went out one time, first practice, Bristol, and he comes in, and he tells us what the car's doing, me and Derek Finley. But then as soon as he finishes with that, he starts going, now, you know, I saw on them Hendrick's cars, the left side Nacaduct was turned a little bit, and it's way up to the front. And then all of a sudden, this voice came over our radio, and I didn't know he could do this. And it was Dale. He was in the 3 car, and he had our channel. And he said, Dale.
He was in the car?
He was in his car.
Yeah.
Waiting to go out.
Okay.
He come on there. He goes, Daryl, just tell him what the car's doing and driving. Click. I looked at Derek. I said, is that Dale? He goes, yeah, that's Dale. Daryl goes, yeah, it's loose. You need to fix this. Went from there. It was fun times. I mean, Daryl did us a great job. And then he kept the team building because it was a brand new team.
Yeah.
And then he had it ready. It was hitting on all 8 when Steve Park got it back in it.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's a really good story, too. Fast forward a few years to your days with Hall of Fame Racing. I wanted to ask to kind of compare. You've now worked for NFL Hall of Famers and NASCAR Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
You see any similarities there?
Competitiveness, just that drive, that do whatever you got to do to win.
Mm-hmm.
I've been blessed in one way that I have worked for probably the 3 biggest names in auto racing in America, A.J. Foyt, Richard Petty, and Dale Earnhardt. Between those 3, I mean, that is American racing.
Yeah.
So I've had the luxury of working for all of them. And then me growing up in Texas now, I'm a Cowboy fan. So I'm sorry if that offends anybody. So, and I mean,
you're actually from Texas and a Cowboy fan. Yeah. I think that helps.
So I used to watch Staubach when I was little.
Right.
And of course, I watched Aikman. So when I got the chance that I was going to get to be the competition director and the crew chief that first day when those 2 walked in the door, I was tongue-tied. I mean, it was like, I mean, Dale and Richard, they're all good. But I mean, for me, these were my hometown heroes.
Mm-hmm.
They're awesome guys. And you know what? They came in there, and Roger's pretty funny. Roger's a really businessman. And Staubach said, look, I don't know anything about racing. So we think this is going to be a pretty good deal. We got a good sponsor. So just keep us in the black, because we heard these things can go into red pretty easy. And he goes, and I'm happy. And Troy's just like, when are we going to win? We're working on it, Troy.
So you kind of had the business mind just keep us afloat, and the other guy's like, we got to get it in victory lane.
Yeah, Troy showed up. Troy came to quite a few races. He'd bring guests. And we had Terry Labonte started it out. So that was another boyhood dream of mine, because Terry was the only one who made it out of Texas, really, for racing, other than AJ.
Uh-huh.
So Terry was actually our first track champion at San Antonio Raceway, so I kind of followed Terry. So got to crew chief him, and then Tony Raines came in after the first 5 races, and yeah, we had pretty good time.
You remember a time where Troy Aikman stormed out of the hauler because of something JD may have done?
Now that's a lot of things. I don't know which story JD might have told you. I think our favorite story, we were at Indy, and Bill Saunders was one of the partners, and he had a coach like everybody else, an owner. Troy went to go visit Bill, and somewhere in the visit, he went to go use the restroom.
This is the right story.
This is the right story.
Yeah. So Troy was wearing white pants that day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. JD didn't tell you
JD
that
JD didn't tell he us didn't, about the white
no,
pants.
No.
Yeah, so it was pretty obvious that there was, you know, Smurf-looking blue spots all over Troy.
So hold on. He went to use the bathroom, and I'm guessing the toilet.
Yeah, when he went to, don't know really how those things work, but I know when he went and pressed on the lever, blue water went up.
That paints a good picture.
And, so who's going to give Troy Aikman hell, you know? The guy's a lot taller than us. He's our boss. I think JD might have pushed a few buttons right there. But, yeah. It was funny.
Well, so do you remember what JD did? He told us what he did, but yeah. He told us after we ended the podcast. Do you remember what he did to have him storm out?
No.
So what he told us was that Troy came into the hauler, but before he came in there, you had briefed the team and said, hey, because you heard about it, and you were like, hey, guys, Troy's not in a good mood. Just kind of leave him be. Don't make a big stink out of it.
Big stink.
No pun intended.
So
he said he walked in and was, you all having like a team meeting or something. Yeah. Everybody was standing around. And he said he just kind of leaned over to him and took a big whiff. You know, he was like.
You smell that?
He didn't say. He's like, I didn't say anything, but apparently it caused Troy to storm out of the hall.
I knew it was involving JD and he had done something, but I never got the true story of what happened.
Well, that's what JD told us.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That's the story
I believe
now.
It. I wouldn't.
Just so you know, I've had to fire JD 4 times in the last 20 years at different places. So he keeps coming back and I'm stupid enough to keep on hiring him. So.
Oh, man.
Well, that leads me right into my next question. What do you look for when you're assembling a team? You know, you talked about being like crew chief and competition director. What kind of like separates those two roles?
Well, the crew chief really needs to focus on his driver, his car. And as a competition director, we try to give him all the tools and the surrounding cast so he can do his job. If Jerry, in this case, and Jerry Baxter, who does us an excellent job, if all he has to worry about is that race car, and Eric Jones,
right,
and not uniforms and hotels and engineers and software and all the things that go into a team. Imagine just running your household. Your wife's going to cook a much better meal if you leave her alone in the kitchen than if you go and just bombard her with all this stuff.
Just had this conversation with my wife. Well,
then you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. So that's really what a competition director does. And I can do all the pre-interviewing for people coming in. Obviously, I want Jerry involved or any crew chief involved, mm-hmm, because these guys, they have to work for Jerry. But, you know, I can kind of be the front face and screen and figure out who's going to be the good pieces. And so other than JD, I think I've done a pretty decent job on getting people to Jerry. We got a great team. And, I mean, it's not always about talent. I'm sure Edmund told you this. It's, yes, you got to have some talent. You got to know how to work on a car. You got to know the basics. But it's the character. If you can get, you know the old saying, you get two people in a room, you start getting an argument. Three people's worse. Goes on and on and on. We got 40 people here. Mm-hmm. It takes everybody pulling the rope in the same direction. They may not give each other Christmas cards at Christmas and go to each other's birthday parties, but here, they're all pulling the same direction, and they all work for each other. They work for Jerry, but they work for each other. And that's the key of having a good team. You know? And I learned that early on because I did meet Joe Gibbs when he first came in this, because mm-hmm, he ended up with Interstate Batteries, and they helped Stanley Smith out. And that's what Joe Gibbs was always big on. It's about the people. And he always told Jimmy Makar that. It's about the people. You get the right people, you know, there's no limit to what we can do.
Yeah. I wish there was a way to that's kind of what our hope is with this podcast and some of the content we're producing is, you know, we see that on a daily basis because we're here and we're around the guy. Well, not as much on now, you know, but we're spending time. We know what the attitude's like. We know what people are trying to do. And I wish more folks on the outside who make comments about our team and whatnot, you know, knew what it was like within the team dynamic and how much, you know, I mean, it's saying that we're a family is kind of cliche, but there's also some real truth to it.
It is. And even more so on a team like ours, that we're a single car team. So we live and die by the small group we have. When you're a four car team, and there is luxuries and some benefits for that, to have a four car team, because if one team's struggling, the other ones can pick up the slack And all through the business, there's checks and balances, but on a single car team, we're it. So if I mess up, it's going to hurt some people. And if JD messes up, it's going to hurt some people. We all have our jobs here, and we all got to do it, and we all look out for each other to cover each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I like the small team environment myself. I mean, I've been with big teams, but there's something about, you know, as long as you can be properly funded and get all the resources you need and all the OEM help, it's fun to be on the small side.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree with that. You know, if somebody was looking to get into the industry, what advice would you give them? If they were, you know, maybe in today's time, just out there thinking, I'd love to work on race cars, what would you tell that person?
Well, I mean, it's got to be a desire. And I think this goes for any occupation. You mm-hmm. can't do it for the money. If you think you're going to come over here and make a lot of money, you're going to be disillusioned quick. I look in the garage of all the people that I started with 30 years ago. There's not a whole lot of us left.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a dedicated family or a dedicated wife or a significant other. You know, they have to understand you're going to be gone a lot. And the hours are long, but if it's something you truly love to do. For me, sometimes I don't like Monday. Tuesday's not much better. Wednesday's kind of crappy. But the race on Sunday, that makes everything worth it.
Yeah.
Just to compete. You know, when they drop the green, it's like, okay, all this other stuff goes away, and we're racing. And, you know, it's fun to race.
Yeah.
So if you want to get in the sport, obviously we've headed a lot more toward the engineering side mm-hmm. than when I got in it. So school helps, engineering helps. I see the sport continue on the engineering path. And obviously, whether people my age or not want to accept it, the electric part's coming. Mm-hmm. I don't know when. It might be 5 years, it might be 10 years, but it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
So as a youngster, if you can get ahead in that game, whatever that field, anything that's involved with the new electric cars,
yeah,
that's going to be a mainstay here sooner or later. So if you are 15 years old, you know, that's probably something you want to look at, and that's going to get you more doors opened coming in right away, because the mechanic side is going to get smaller and smaller and smaller, because we've got these cars to the point that we can put them together pretty quick.
Yeah.
I mean, when I got in this, it was an ordeal to put a car together. Everything was handmade. You didn't really buy much of anything. You had to make everything. So it took forever to put a car together. Now, if we just scheduled 1 week out, we're good. We got it. Well, I mean, our shop foreman's on it.
Yep.
He works down there with RCR, and he can get the chassis to the plate, to the body.
I mean, I know that because he'll come to me for paint schemes, and he'll be like, yep. He'll be like, I need a paint scheme for Homestead. And I was like, well, that's in 5 weeks. And he's like, yeah, well, we're wrapping the car tomorrow. So, you know, I mean, like.
It's just amazing how they can do it really quick if they need to. And some of that's come from, the sports innovated to the point like wind tunnel. Wind tunnel is big. Live or die by the wind tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
It's all aero now. So we're always wind tunneling. Sometimes it's Wednesday night. Well, guess what? They find something. Well, guess what? Got to go to work Thursday morning before that car gets on the trailer.
Yeah.
You have to do that to stay competitive because the Joneses are doing it, which we got a Jones now. So that's going to work out good.
So if we've got a 17 or 18 year old listening, about to go to college, interested in engineering, don't really know what part of engineering they need to do. If you're looking at a resume, what type of degree are you looking for? What type of experience?
Right off the bat, we look at mechanical engineering
and
aerospace engineering or aeronautical, however they want to, you know, depending on where you're going from.
Mm-hmm.
I may show a little favoritism. If anyone goes to Texas A&M, hired, you're done. Come on in.
How about my Wolfpack? We're going to hire people from the Wolfpack?
We whooped you guys good 2 years ago in the bowl. I only remember because my daughter just graduated from NC State. Very proud of her. She's number one in her class. But we went down to Jacksonville for that game. And she was all in red.
Oh, yeah.
I was all in maroon. And Dad bought the tickets. So guess what side we were sitting on?
Oh, yeah.
The maroon side. As soon as we walked in there, she goes, Dad, NC State people are over there. I'm like, yeah, but you're right here.
Yeah.
Great game.
Yeah. My dad and I both went to Virginia Tech, so we get to sit on the same side.
There you go.
Yeah, works
that
out
helps.
Well.
That helps.
What did you study at A&M?
Mechanical engineering.
Okay.
So, but that's what really we look for the most. Those two. But Civil engineering is going to get you in the door. Obviously, as this sport heads toward the electric cars, any kind of engineering that's going to help on that platform, that's where we're going.
Yeah. That kind of leads into my next question as well. So, you know, I was going to ask you, how has racing changed the most from your perspective over the years? And we talked a little bit about that. You know, let's say hypothetically they gave you the reins and said, Philippe, you can implement one change to today's NASCAR. What would you do?
It's too late. I would have, and this will not be a popular opinion, I would have never let the cars get down on bump stops. I know why we did it.
Right.
And it's the way you had to go.
Mm-hmm.
But
for those listening that don't know bump stop.
Well, we used to run cars on normal suspension. You had four springs and the cars went up and down, and you've seen the pictures of the old cars. They're coming around the corner and the left front's hanging on the ground, and
yeah.
You know, it's aerodynamic F all the way. F. There is no aerodynamic. But now, you know, I guess the IMSA cars and the Indy cars, they all went that direction. You know, low platform, keep it at a certain height all the way around the racetrack. So the only way to do that is basically take the springs out of the car and you put them down on a piece of rubber. And the car just sits there like a go-kart.
Mm-hmm.
It has led to a different type of tire because Goodyear has to chase the model that we're running. Back in the day, when cars were flopping all over the place, Goodyear just put soft tire on there. The thing slowed down 3 seconds on a tire run, so we had tire management. That's gone in our racing. We don't do that no more. Now every lap's pretty much a qualifying lap. There's a few racetracks where you got to save your tire a little bit, but these drivers, I mean, they earn their money. They're going fast every single lap. If they cool it, it's just for a corner because they got to get going. And that's just part of the way the sport's gone, being on bump stops. So yeah, if I could spin the wheel,
yeah,
I'd go back to when the cars were all floppy.
Yeah, I think that's a great one. You want to take a quick break, Chris, and hear from our sponsor?
Yeah, I think speaking of high performance, we should talk about our sponsor, Petty's Garage.
All right, today the Richard Petty Motorsports Podcast is again presented by Petty's Garage.
Petty's Garage is from the mind of Richard Petty himself. Petty's Garage is a haven for any fan of speed.
That's right. Petty's Garage is a full-service speed shop dedicated to continuing the legacy and reputation of the king.
The experts at Petty's Garage provide exceptional engines, tuning, and high-performance parts for you, the enthusiast.
Famous for the high-quality service and craftsmanship, Petty's Garage embodies Richard Petty's passion for being the best.
The best. Whether you're adding on to a current project, upgrading your ride completely, or just need our tuning department to squeeze out that last little bit of power from your engine, you can trust Petty's Garage to give your car performance that the king would be proud of.
That's right, Petty's Garage has you covered, so visit them online right now at petty's-garage.com. All right, let's go back to the beginning where you mentioned a name that was kind of a big name. Was Chad Knaus. And I know he's mentioned your name before in some interviews and stuff. You know, talk about when you brought him on board and if you kind of saw some potential there. Or...
Yeah, we had one of the races we ran was Rockford, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got to know some people there. And people from up there were hearing that, you know, Stanley, we got Interstate Batteries. We're going to start running cup races. So we started getting some interest. And Stanley got a recommendation for a couple of guys from up there. And one was Joe Shearer Jr., and the other one was Chad Knaus.
Mm-hmm.
We had already hired Butch Hilton, who was also from Rockford. All three of them raced in there locally. So we had already had Butch for a couple months, and Butch was great. So when Stanley came down and said, what do you think? I said, well, Butch is fantastic. The other two, if they're like Butch, we're going to be great.
Yeah.
So here they come. We all come in the door. We never told Butch what we were doing. So one day, here comes Joe. And then here comes Chad. And then, so they're unloading their boxes and they're getting ready. And
did they both know that the other had been hired?
I've got to believe they did.
Mm-hmm.
And I, of course, just thought it was two guys coming from Rockford. Butch Hilton kind of grabbed me by the shirt and goes, hey, let's go to your office. So we went in the office and closed the door. And he looked at me and goes, dude, he goes, you have any idea what you've done? And I'm like, what? He said, you got Joe Shearer and Chad Knaus out here. They're going to work here? And I said, yeah, why? He goes, they don't like each other at all.
Ooh.
And I'm like, what do you mean they don't like each other? He goes, well, their dads are the two hot shoes at Rockford, Illinois.
Oh.
He said, those two, they're always the ones going for the track championship. So this, they think they're cheating, and they think they're cheating, and there's been it's not been good blood for a long time. And I was like, oh, God. So I ran up to the house and told Stanley, I said, you know, Bush just said these two don't like. He said, well, you know, just watch them. So, okay. Stanley stays in the house, and I get to work them. So.
Mm-hmm.
It worked out.
Yeah.
You could tell there was a little animosity. I think a lot of that went away as time went by. I think we only had one thrown wrench.
Okay.
I'm not going to say who threw the wrench, but it was right after someone's Ziz wheel exploded, and a piece of Ziz wheel flew by one guy's face and into the stuck in the wall, and then that's what prompted the wrench, and we all had to jump in.
Ooh.
Like I said, I'm not going to name who was who and who threw what.
Right, it's not important. Yeah,
but it was an interesting time for a while. But no, I mean, both of them are excellent crew chiefs now, obviously.
Yeah.
And Chad's like, you know, Chad's Chad.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing what he's done, and we're all just super proud of him. But Joe, on his own right, is a great crew chief. I mean, him and Sauter have been awesome what they've accomplished. And, you know, Butch Hilton, too. Yeah, Butch Hilton's jumped around. Crew chiefs a lot of trucks in Xfinity, so... It was fun times back then. It was fun while I was in the mix.
Yeah. If only you guys would have known at that time, you know, where everybody was headed.
Yeah, we had no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea. And like I said, when we all broke up, because we lost our main funding, so everyone started taking off, and none of us really went to cup jobs. I went to Florida to go work on a late model.
Oh,
and
wow.
I think Chad, that's when he went to go work in the paint and body shop at Hendrick. Chad's probably the one who got the earliest jump. And then I'm not really sure where Joe and Butch went. But, oh, Butch went to go work for A.G. Dillard, which was the Ward Burton Hardy Chevrolet. So it was about 6 months later, Butch calls me and say, hey, they need a crew chief come up here. You want to come up here? And I'm like, sure, why not?
Talk about radio communications with Ward Burton.
There was no. I had Ronnie Crooks with me, and half the time when Ward would say something, I'd go, what did he say? Ronnie goes, I don't know. Let's just free him up some more.
And
Ward,
you
asked earlier about drivers.
Yeah.
Ward is one of the most talented persons that I've ever worked with. No fear.
Wow.
Zero.
I kind of see that with the videos he posts to Twitter holding snakes and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's got some issues on that side, but from a driving standpoint, but he was so fiery competitive. We were at a Charlotte race, sat on the pole that night. Sunday the race started, and he was flying. I mean, flying. But if you know Ward, he was complaining the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Is like, gee, Dave Philippe, the car doing this, and I can't get a corner. It won't turn. It won't. And the whole time, the spotter's going, clear, clear.
You're clear. Like, Ward, you're leading the race.
So
what do you want me to do?
That's exactly what it was. But after he finished his little tirade, I'm like, okay, well, you're P1 right now. What exactly do you want us to do to this thing? I am. So, yeah.
I was actually at Petty's Garage this past week, and one of the guys that works there was telling us a story. It's funny you mentioned Ward Burton, was telling us a story about Ward at a Caterpillar marketing event? And do you remember what he said?
No.
Well, he's at a Caterpillar marketing event. Bobcat.
Oh.
Because somebody asked him, you know, what piece of equipment would you want? And he said, I'd like to have one of them Bobcats over there. Yeah.
Ward's
that's a big no-no.
Yeah.
You know what? And you really wouldn't think much about, you know, Ward's accent and how he talks. I love him.
Everybody does.
But it's not until you meet his brother that you're like, did you guys live in the same house? There's no way.
Right.
Because they don't talk anything alike. And I think Jeff's the one who jokes that Ward lived on the south side of the house and he lived on the north side of the house, and that's where the accent came.
Yeah.
Oh, I always loved Ward growing up.
Oh, yeah. He was fun.
Yeah. That's a great story. I've been told that you are the largest stakeholder of Big Daddy's barbecue sauce.
Oh, God. All right. correct from earlier, JD is now fired five times. Five times. JD?
How did that come about?
Well, I worked for another team.
He texted me that this morning, by the way, never mind.
Yeah, Larry Hedrick, great guy. He just passed away recently. But we were, he was looking for a sponsor that winter, and these people came up, Big Daddy's Barbecue Sauce. And yeah, they said all the right things.
Sounds like a winner.
Not only did they say the right things, I bought it, and I bought stock. And I bought a lot of it. Because I was like, these guys are going, you know, international. I mean, this is huge. Yeah. I think my purchase was probably half the sponsorship that came back to Larry, and they disappeared. I still have the certificate. It looks really good, all those shares. I think it's split 1 billion times.
You have it framed up and hung somewhere?
I have it in the back of a filing cabinet where I keep all my tax records. So when I need a laugh, thanks, JD, for bringing that up.
There's also a story about a bobblehead that we were going to bring out here during the middle of the podcast.
Which bobblehead?
Oh, which one was it?
Well, it's the one that's sitting on his toolbox out there.
The Ollie's?
Yeah,
Ollie's.
Yeah. That was our sponsor for Dave Blaney at Bill Davis. And I don't look anything like that guy. But according to JD, I look like that guy. With the white mustache. And he looks more like Einstein. And that's not me. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one caught fire in the garage for a little while. Thank you, JD.
we got to talk about our adventures at Indy 2 years ago, which Philippe set me up for failure is what happened.
I set you up.
Yeah, you're the one that told me I was driving. And
well, first off, who are your passengers?
Okay, well, let me set this
up.
Yeah,
set it up, set it up.
Yeah,
as competition director, I am the official keeper of Dale Inman. Dale Inman's the official keeper of Richard Petty. So after a race, I make sure we all get together, we get in the car, and we go hauling to the airport. I know what those two can be like. Sometimes it's a peaceful trip, and if things get hectic, it cannot be so peaceful. If you've ever been to an Indy race and seen the 400 yellow shirt people that they have directing traffic, you know it can be hectic. If I threw Bradley under the bus, it was simply that as I walked to the car, I thought about what was we were getting ready to face, and I said, here's the keys. You drive.
Yeah, so I'm – our rules is you're not supposed to drive rental cars until you're 25. I guess that's the rental car rules or whatever. I had turned 25, I think, the week prior. And normally, if unfortunately it wasn't the best race for us or something, you know, Philippe, Richard, and Dale, they'll just be ready to head out right at the time of the checkered
flag. Get straight to the airport.
Yeah, I mean, because planes load up, and as soon as they're full, they leave. So, like, the race to the airport is the real race, is like everybody says, right? Because the earlier you get there, it could be a difference in an hour or two when you get home. And after a long weekend, that means a lot. So, of course, we had an excellent run. I mean, Bubba finished third. It was a great day performance-wise, and Richard wanted to go out in pit road and congratulate him, give him a pat on the back, you know. But that also pushed his timeline back, even though he still wanted to get to the airport about the same time.
That meant traffic.
Yeah. So I'm at the rental car by the bus waiting, and he texts me, and he goes, "You're driving." And I've never driven from a track to the airport after a race in my life.
You're not a very crazy driver anyways.
I wouldn't say that, no. And I'm definitely not good in high-pressure situations either. I'll just be honest, you know. And, yeah, so Philippe, he just climbs right into the back seat, puts his seatbelt on. I didn't hear a word from him the whole trip.
Nah, I knew what was fixing to happen.
And Richard, Richard's been to however many races. He's got more experience than anybody, you know, and he's like, he's starting me out pretty quick, you know. He's like, "All right, you need to follow this guy. All right, you need to listen to that guy. He's telling you to go. You better go, you know. And so I'm trying to keep up. First time I've ever been to the track. This is my first year working for the team. I mean, I'm green as you can get. And we get out to the main road, and Richard's like, "All right, you're going to need to take a left across these five lanes of traffic." get all the way over, and you're going to make a right at that stoplight. It's like 100 yards up.
Not even.
Yeah, it's right there. And, I mean, there's four lanes going each way. And I'm like, all right, we'll figure this out. So I get a gap, shoot across. I'm like, all right, we're home free. I go to make this right turn, and there's law enforcement there trying to tell me I can't go there.
They had cones set up. Indiana's finest.
Yeah, and so I start to kind of slow down because I got cones and whatnot, and you can tell Richard's like, what are you doing? You know, he starts... We all love Richard to death. We know what kind of person he is. But I will say that in the car from the track to the airport, his patience level is slim.
Especially with the new guy.
Yeah. You know, and he starts raising his voice at me, and I'm trying to figure out what to do. And finally, he's just like, just go, you know? And so I just mashed the gas, took off down the road we weren't supposed to go. I kept checking my mirror, you know, I didn't see anybody chasing after us. So when we get to the airport, and I'm sweating just thinking about this story. I mean, this.
So hold on. Apparently something happened between
that event.
Can we say that?
We get to the airport, and then Richard pats me on the back. He goes, good job, buddy.
Good job, buddy.
And he was serious. Like he meant it, you know. He was like, hey, you made it through. You know, we got here.
Bradley still had his feelings hurt from 20 minutes earlier at that right turn.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, Richard, like, he was good. We actually had accomplished the goal, which blew my mind, but it was the later on in the week where you guys got me, if you want to
take it from there.
When he took that illegal right turn against what the police were directing him to do, he might have – he got very close to one of them. In fact, I think one of them might have touched the side mirror.
Oh, okay.
So it was pretty traumatic. So we were all afraid to look back because we didn't know what we were going to see. And so we got a letter in the mail. And it was directed to me. And that's because the rental car is in my name.
Oh.
Yeah.
So... I went to HR about it and went to our in-house legal, and we all talked about it. And I said, you know, basically, I'm not taking the fall for this. I said, I wasn't driving. So our in-house legal worked on some documentation. And it looked about as authentic as it could be.
Yes.
A summons for an arrest. He was at lunch. And I think I texted him and said, you've got to get back here now.
You sent it to me in an email.
Yes.
And you were like, we need to meet on this ASAP.
ASAP.
I come back from lunch and you...
We had HR in here, legal,
CEO.
Everybody was in on it. This poor kid.
I had already texted my parents. They were out west. Somewhere, I think they were on a trip somewhere. Yeah, like they weren't even like in town. I'm like texting my dad. It's like, we got problems.
So, yeah, I was proud of everyone for just keeping it going. Yeah. And, you know, they let me start. And I was like, you know, Bradley, I don't know what to tell you, but I'm not going to get in trouble for this.
Yeah.
You know, you're my teammate and all that, but I'm not getting in trouble for this. I don't care if the rental car's in my name. You were driving. So you're going to have to figure this out. So he looks at Bill, our in-house legal, and Bill's like... Ooh, this is serious, guys. I don't know what.
This is our lawyer telling me he can't do anything for me.
That's the last thing you want to hear from your lawyer.
Yeah, he said I looked at this up and down 10 ways, and you're out of luck, basically.
We made poor Bradley sweat for about 10 minutes, but
yeah,
we finally broke it to him.
It took a little bit, but after a while, it was one of the best pranks I've ever seen executed.
You ever done anything else like that to anybody else?
Not that bad. And the look of relief on his face, which we all felt bad afterwards. We're like, oh, my God, did you see Bradley? He's about to have a heart attack.
Yeah, Bradley doesn't do well under pressure.
No.
So I couldn't imagine.
No.
Come through like a champ.
It's an amazing story, though. Like, I'll tell that story for the rest of my life for sure.
The only other thing, I think I've got someone good, and it was on a national level, at DLP, Hall of Fame, 96. Tony Raines was driving, and Tony really liked to come by the shop a lot. As far as one of the drivers that stayed engaged with the crew, he was great. He was there about every other day. He came in one day, and he had a big interview on, at the time, Race Hub, whatever it was. They were shooting on South Charlotte. So he came by the shop first. He goes, I'm just going to see all the guys. I said, okay. So we'll go talk to everyone. I said, you know, don't waste no time. You know, that thing's live. He goes, okay. Our PR guy, Chip Crowley, was going to take him down there. So Tony leaves. I look down at my office, and Tony's sunglasses are there. So I don't know why. Well, I took out my black Sharpie, and I started coloring the nose guards. And if Tony was back in the back talking to the guys for 20 minutes, I colored on it for 19. This is Charlotte summer where, you know, the humidity is 100%.
Yeah.
And so, hey, Tony, here's your glasses. You need to get them. So he left. I forgot. I just forgot. I knew Tony was on TV that night. And
but you weren't thinking about.
I was not thinking. And about 6:30, he calls me. And he goes, you son of a... I was like, whoa, what's wrong with you? He goes, you just made me look like a heroin addict on national TV. I was like, what are you talking about? He goes, my eyes are black. I said, you didn't film like that. And he goes, yeah, I did. And I said, well, wasn't your PR Crowley with you? He goes, well, he didn't say anything because he thought I just didn't get enough sleep.
Oh, my God.
So we all ran home to watch it, and sure enough, he has black eyes.
Oh,
the
wow.
whole segment. And nobody said anything to him.
Oh, man.
2 weeks later, at the VIR test, he pulled my drive shaft out of my Tahoe and left me a little wrench. So after the test was over with, he got me back. Yeah.
That's a great way to get somebody back.
Man. Oh, man.
Yeah, especially when it's raining. It was not fun.
Oh,
man. Anything else we want to touch on before we wrap up, Philippe? You know, new driver, Daytona's coming up.
Man, we're excited.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Eric's proved a lot of things, and I think he's got a lot to prove. And we're trying to put ourselves in a position. I feel like we're in a good place with RCR, cars, motors, crew. Our pit crew is phenomenal.
Yeah.
They clicked on something halfway through last year. And all of a sudden, their ranking they started climbing and climbing and climbing. And then we were above, you know, I hate when they say that. Well, you know, you're overachieving. You're beating people you're not supposed to. No, I expect to beat everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care.
Right.
And our pit crew is getting it done. So made a small change this winter. They've been practicing. I think they're better now than they were at the end of last year.
Really?
So that's exciting.
Eric
that's great
Jones
to hear.
Is excited. I mean, that's a lot of the battle.
Yeah.
Because if a driver can come in, at least stay par. It's great if you pick up positions, but just don't lose, because that's hard on a driver. Cause it's so hard to get positions. So, you know, Eric's excited about it. The guys are excited. I see some good races coming for us.
Yeah. Have you seen the new race car sitting out there?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Got three of them right now. Two of them are getting ready to get wrapped. I guess I can't say what sponsors are yet, so I'll
it's a good looking
secret.
Yeah. It's a good looking race car, though.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Awesome.
Can't really talk about that one yet.
No, hopefully they'll see you here pretty soon.
Yeah.
But Philippe, thanks for taking the time with us. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, bud, this has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, next time you're on the podcast, I'd like for you to grow your hair out how it was and all those pictures that we were looking at earlier.
It won't do that no more.
Oh, won't do that anymore?
No, I tried, and all I ended up with was a beard. So I shaved it last night.
It just relocated.
Because it was picture day, so... my days of looking like Paul Stanley are way long gone.
Oh, man. Well, it's been great having you.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun. Thanks. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you.